That is not like you, George.
I've nothing to say.
You have many things.
Well, nothing that's not been said.
Said by you, though,
George. I do not know where to go.
And nor did I.
I want to make things that count.
Things that
I did what I had to do.
What am I to do?
Keep moving on. My chosen, my world was shaken. So what? My choice may have been mistaken. The choosing was not. You have to move on. Look at what you want, not at where you are, not at what you'll be. Look at all the things you've done for me. Opened up my arms, taught me how to see,
notice every tree,
understand the light, concentrate
I
on
want
love.
The Stephen Sondheim Encyclopedia is a comprehensive reference devoted to musical theater's most prolific and admired composer and lyricist. Entries cover Sondheim's numerous collaborators, from composers and directors to designers and orchestras. Key songs, such as his Academy Award winner Sooner or Later from Dick Tracy, and major works, including Assassins, Company, Follies, Sweeney Todd, and West Side Story. The encyclopedia also contains information about Sondheim's mentoring by Oscar Hammerstein and his early collaboration with Leonard Bernstein, as well as profiles of the actors who originated roles and sang Sondheim songs for the very first time, including Ethel Merman, Angela Lansbury, Mandy Patinkin, and, of course, Bernadette Peters. Rick Pender has been an award-winning theater critic since 1986. He is past chair of the American Theater Critics Association and was the executive editor and publisher of Everything Sondheim and managing editor of the Sondheim Review. He is now the author of the voluminous, the Stephen Sondheim Encyclopedia. It is published by Roman and Littlefield, and it's a great pleasure to welcome Rick Pender to the roundtable this morning. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Good morning. I'm glad to be with you.
Well, it's very nice to have you on the program. This is a volume. Good for you. This is 650 pages. It is exhaustive. It is, and I'm assuming, an exhausting project to work on from beginning to end.
Well, it took quite a while. The writing of it took almost 2 years, and that was as if it were my full-time job. I was pretty much at it, at least 5 days a week. So it was. On the other hand, I don't think I was ever exhausted working on it, because there was so much to write about and to explore and convey to people who might know something about Stephen Sondheim but are eager to find out more.
So how ultimately do you envision it being read/used?
Well, the book is really a reference volume. Roman and Littlefield, my publisher, one of its principal markets is libraries, university libraries, that sort of thing. But I also have to imagine, given the many fans of Sondheim that I encountered as I was editing magazines about him, this will be something that will be snapped up by many of them. Many of them are completists who want, everything that's been published about Sondheim. And then beyond that, I also think that it is a book that could be of great interest to anyone who is simply a fan of musical theater, because many of the people that I profile in the book are people who, while they were certainly key players in Sondheim's career, are also people, actors, directors, designers, who are the people who populated Broadway and put shows on from the 1950s, right up to the present, frankly.
Let us talk a moment just about why this is the way it is, in the sense of that so many people, such as yourself and many, many others, that this is such a revered and respected presence in the theater world?
Well, Stephen Sondheim is remarkable in several ways. One, you mentioned right from the outset that he is both a composer and a lyricist. That is unusual. With the majority of Broadway productions, it is two separate people, like Rodgers and Hammerstein or Kander and Ebb. So most of Sondheim's shows, after a few early ones in his career, he handled both ends of that equation. So that is one overt reason. But secondly, and this is what I like to tell people who ask me that question, is that he did more than just create entertaining shows. His works are shows that really delve into human character and tell stories that are unexpected from one show to the next. He has a song called "I Never Do Anything Twice," and that could very much be the byword of his career, because his shows, you know, range from a serial killer in Sweeney Todd and presidential assassins in a show called Assassins to the history of Japan in a show called Pacific Overtures to ancient Rome with a funny thing happened on the way to the Forum. I mean, they are all different. The music and the lyrics that he created for each of those was an outgrowth of the story that was created and the characters that he was creating. The final thing I would say about that is that he really wrote music that was profoundly fixed within those characters. He wanted to understand who they were and then write songs that would reveal more about their character or about their motivations, all of that kind of thing.
Rick Pender is our guest. His new book is The Stephen Sondheim Encyclopedia. It is published by Roman and Littlefield. Talk about the entries. You do an alphabetical cataloging here, but give us a sense of what's included, of how you decided on that particular format.
Sure. There are 131 entries over those 650 or so pages. I suppose principally what will draw people are the entries about Sondheim's 18 shows. Each one begins with sort of an overview, maybe a quick, what this story is about. But then it goes into a full synopsis of the show and then a much more in-depth background about the creative team. You know, Sondheim shows are always referred to as Sondheim shows, but they are not created by him solely. He usually has a book writer who is writing the script for the shows. He has worked with a number of the greatest Broadway directors and with many designers. So those people are all profiled about their own careers in entries. And then also many of the actors who were with him and originated roles. Now, I could have probably done more than 131 entries if I had tried to catalog everyone who had played a major role in his shows. But what I did to try to contain it is that if some of them were perhaps they had a significant role, but they were just in one show, then I would allow that entry to dig into who they were and why they were important.
Yeah, let's go ahead.
I was just going to say, I also extensively cover Sondheim's own life. There is a biographical entry and then a number of sort of, I guess I would call them kind of sidebars. Again, everything is in alphabetical order, but there's an entry about the juvenile works that he wrote before he was actually working on Broadway. There's one about his interest in films, his favorite films. He's quite a film buff. There is another about his opinions about opera, which are interesting to read. You'd think that, he works in a sort of a parallel art form with musical theater. And some of his productions are now staged by opera companies. But he has some rather strong opinions about opera, and I tried to share some of those. So those are some of the kind of things that I cover in the book.
You were touching on this just a moment ago, and I just wanted to highlight it for a second, and that is the fact that, you know, I always think about what you include, but it's fascinating to me as to what you were forced to leave out, or maybe not even forced, but opted to leave out, because you could go in a million other directions. As you say, you were limited to 100. 136, is that what you said?
131
yeah. entries. So, you know, you certainly there could have been more. So what was that process like of like, oh, OK, I'm sorry, you don't make the cut?
Well, I specifically with the actors and many of the designers and directors identified people who had won Tonys, in many cases, multiple Tonys. And those people, you know, having won those awards in Broadway productions, and my focus in each show was specifically on the original production. I did, as I completed many of those entries, also added information about significant revivals and in some cases film versions that had also followed out. And then in a few cases, such as the Sweeney Todd film, which was directed by Tim Burton, who is quite an esteemed film director and starred Johnny Depp. I do have entries about them because their roles were rather significant, and Sondheim was very pleased with that film. So I tried to apply some filters like that along the way. I will tell you that my initial brainstorming for entries that I would include was well over 200. And so I did have to whittle it down, but I did try to be sure to include all of those who were on that original list. They are referenced in there, that many of them can be found through a comprehensive index that we have, even if there aren't entries. I would say one other thing about the book that I think that might appeal to people. I find it a little bit like a dictionary, and I've had other people tell me that. You look up one thing and read that, and then there are references to other things, and you find yourself an hour later still, you know, you've read three more entries that gave you a bit more information. And I think that's rather how the book will work. It's not, somebody's not going to sit down and start with George Abbott, who's the director, who's the first entry, right, and read all the way through to the song, You Could Drive a Person Crazy from Company, which there weren't any Z entries, so we stopped at Y. But there's a lot in between. A lot in between there, and you know, I think people will find it interesting to just sort of browse through it and come back to it on frequent occasions.
Rick Pender is the author of the Stephen Sondheim Encyclopedia. He is our guest this morning. One of the things I find interesting about the book, so if you go to, say, Follies, then it will tell you the story of Follies, and then it will give you the list of songs almost as if in the program. And then you also will give certain songs their due separately within the context of the encyclopedia.
That's right. That's right. I have 10 songs that I treat in quite a bit of depth, and I say I, and that isn't entirely accurate. When I was editing the magazine, I had a writer, a man, Mark Eden Horowitz, who is a librarian at the Library of Congress, whose focus is on musical theater. And he had written a series of essays for me for the magazine called Biography of a Song, in which he went into incredible depth in writing about single numbers. And in each of those, he would talk about the music theory behind the composition. He would write about Sondheim's many noodling over what words were the best words to use, how they fit into the show, all of that kind of thing. And those were way longer than were appropriate for an entry in my book. But many times they were like 5,000, 6,000, even 7,000 words. But Mark has been a big help to me over the years. I talked to him and said, can I use this material? And I took what I thought were the really essential pieces of that would be informative to people looking in the encyclopedia, and reduced them to about 1,500 words. So there are a number of songs that I think really demonstrate Sondheim's incredible artistry, and I did rely on a lot of Mark's insights in creating those.
I was fascinated by the fact that you, I mentioned this in the introduction, one of the sections I really enjoyed reading was about Oscar Hammerstein. Talk a little bit about that entry and doing the research for that particular influence on Stephen Sondheim.
So Sondheim's parents divorced when he was a young adolescent, and he and his mother moved out to the countryside. They had been living in Manhattan. They moved out into the countryside in eastern Pennsylvania. And there, they were in a rather rural area near Doylestown, and living on a farm nearby, within bicycle riding distance, was Oscar Hammerstein and his family. And Sondheim was befriended by Hammerstein's son, Jimmy, and began to hang out at their house occasionally. His relationship with his mother was not the best. And Hammerstein sort of became his surrogate father because Hammerstein was in the midst of creating some of those great musicals that he did in the 1940s, Oklahoma, Carousel, South Pacific, and so on. Sondheim very much admired that and was an aspiring musical creator himself. Hammerstein very much encouraged him. Sondheim wrote a school show for the private school he was attending. It was called the George School, and the show was called By George, with an exclamation point. And he was quite proud of that work. At about the age of about 14, 15, he shared it with Oscar, and with the notion that, oh, Oscar will see this and he'll think, this is great, we should put this on Broadway. Well, that wasn't quite the way that played out. But what Hammerstein did was tell Sondheim that if he really wanted to learn about creating musicals, here were some projects that he could undertake. And he suggested that he take a play that he admired and write some music, try to turn it into a musical. And so there were a series of four projects like that, which over the next several years, including his time at Williams College, he created some of those kinds of things. So Oscar very much mentored him through that. Sondheim says that on that afternoon when he was given the news that his show wouldn't be immediately going to Broadway, that it really was the day on which he learned as much about creating musical theater as some people might experience in a lifetime.
Yeah, not to say you're downplaying it, but what Hammerstein said, as you say in the book, well, it's the worst thing I've ever read. I didn't say it was untalented. I said it was terrible. And if you want to know why it's terrible, I'll tell you. Well, that's pretty direct.
That's right. And, and Steve absorbed that. He said he admired Hammerstein so much that if Hammerstein had been a geologist, he might have become a geologist himself. We should all be grateful that Oscar Hammerstein was who he was, I guess, because that gave us that. The other thing that's important to say about Hammerstein's influence on Sondheim's career is that on two separate occasions, when he was just getting started, Sondheim was offered the opportunity to be just, I'm saying that with air quotes around it, just a lyricist. And he was not so enthusiastic. He wanted to be a lyricist and a composer. But the first opportunity that came his way was to work with Leonard Bernstein, Jerome Robbins, and Arthur Lawrence and write the lyrics for West Side Story. Hammerstein said to him, Steve, don't pass this up. You should do this. You'll be working with people already well established in New York and on Broadway, and that will, you know, lay a firm foundation for your career. Something similar happened just a few years after West Side Story with the musical Gypsy. Ethel Merman did not want an untried composer creating music for that, so she turned to Julie Stein, but Arthur Lawrence, Sondheim's friend who had written the script for West Side Story, was also doing the script for Gypsy, and he put Sondheim forward as potential lyricist. Sondheim was less than enthusiastic again, and again Hammerstein said to him, Steve, you'll be working with a major star. Ethel Merman, you know, was at the top of everyone's list, and he said, that kind of experience, writing music for a well-known performer, will serve you well as you go forward in your career. Now, think about the future people that he worked with, people like Angela Lansbury and Bernadette Peters. And a lot of that stemmed from that good advice that Hammerstein gave him about working with someone like Ethel Merman.
You know, you think of somebody like Bernadette Peters, and you're right about this, but you think about someone like her, who's just sort of the quintessential Stephen Sondheim actress.
Yes, very much so. I mean, in part because I think that Bernadette Peters is something of an intellectual herself, and she so responded to Sondheim writing character roles or songs for characters that really had that kind of depth. When she played Dot in Sunday in the Park with George, when she played the witch in Into the Woods, those characters extremely different from one another. But, Sondheim really created songs that enabled her as an actress to expand upon what she was creating in the role itself. And she has gone on throughout her career. I mean, she has several recordings that are all but exclusively of songs by Stephen Sondheim. So there was sort of a loved relationship between them that was established from the time in the 80s when they worked together.
Just a quick point of clarification, we should say, since it's in our listening area, that Williams College does not have its own entry, but it certainly is mentioned throughout the text, including in a section, as you refer to, as the juvenile works.
That's correct. And that was Sondheim's alma mater. He was there. He graduated in 1950. He was a precocious student. While he was there, he even acted in a few shows, although he said that acting wasn't really for him. An interesting statement given someone who went on to write so incisively and insightfully about roles that people were playing. But he wrote several shows while he was there, one and two of which were based on those projects that Hammerstein had assigned to him. So it was very much a great breeding ground. He had a couple of teachers there that he still admires deeply. Sondheim himself has a great admiration for teachers, and I think some of that probably began with Oscar Hammerstein, but continued with several of the people that he had as teachers when he was at Williams College.
The name of the new book is The Stephen Sondheim Encyclopedia. It is published by Roman and Littlefield. It is just fascinating and a wonderful encyclopedia of all things Sondheim. Rick Pender, a great pleasure. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you, Joe. I'm glad to have the opportunity to talk to you.
Great pleasure to have you on the program. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.
I mean, when you've got friends like mine. Isn't it warm? Isn't it rosy? Side by side.
He's such a cutie.
By side.
Isn't he a cutie?
Ports in a storm. Comfy and cozy, side by side.
He never loses his cool.
By side.
I envy that.
Everything shines. How sweet. Side by side. By side. Parallel lines who meet. Everyone winks, nobody's nosy, side by side.
He's just crazy about me.
By side.
He's a very tender guy.
You make the drinks and I'll bring the posy, side by side.
He's always there when you need it.
By side.